Hello and welcome to Audio Readers Sports Show. My name is Steve Jack and today we'll finish up our readings from the September football preview issue of Sports Illustrated and begin reading articles from the October issue of SI. First, Two's the One. The namesake son of an all-pro at the position, high-flying Broncos quarterback, Patrick Surtain II has put himself among the NFL's defensive elite and is poised to raise Denver to new heights. And there are a couple of photos that accompany the article at the top of the page. The first one is a photo shot from the corner of the Broncos stadium, looking at Surtain from the back as he runs out onto the field with smoke announcing his arrival, shooting out behind the player who has his arms out stretched in the stadium packed with fans in the background, and a profile headshot of Surtain wearing a gray zippered shirt with a white t-shirt peeking out from his chest, a nice gold necklace, diamond earrings with his initials on them, and right behind his right ear is a crown tattoo on his neck. And the caption, standout achievement, Surtain is only the 7th cornerback in 54 seasons to win Defensive Player of the Year. Two's the One is written by Mitch Goldrich. All eyes are on Deuce, the 80-pound, 10-month-old Doberman with ears sticking straight up like a ref signaling touchdown, runs into a fenced-in pit full of pebbles and makes a beeline for a smaller dog. They run up and down along the fence, playing and chasing each other, and the humans nearby can't help but watch the big dog cover such a tremendous amount of ground. In a park just a few miles from downtown Denver, several dozen people are enjoying a sunny afternoon, and nobody so much as turns their head toward the soft-spoken NFL star, his loose-fitting white hoodie hiding his physique. If Deuce were a football player, he'd be a wide receiver, Patrick Surtain II says. He'd be a good little receiver. He got the speed, changes direction good, quickness. But I'd lock him up, though, the all-pro corner and reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year says. Of course he would. He locks up everyone else. He wouldn't get off the line of scrimmage, Surtain says, flashing a grin. Deuce is a fitting name for the dog. It's the continuation of a branding exercise that Surtain began in high school. I believe 2 is a lucky number, he says. He decided long ago that he prefers the Roman numeral 2 to the suffix junior just to be a little different. His name preceded him at American Heritage School in Plantation, Florida, given that he was the son of Patrick Surtain Sr., former star of the nearby Dolphins. The elder Surtain was close at hand, too. He was the head coach during his son's senior season, so everyone knew the star corner as Pat Surtain II. Surtain's heritage nickname, Anthony Brown, once called him PS2, like the video game console, and the nickname stuck. So why not lean into it? It became his jersey number at Alabama, where he won a national championship and played in 2 title games in 3 years. And when the NFL loosened its uniform numbering policy just in time for his rookie season in 2021, Surtain carried the lucky digit with him to the pros. This was a big off-season for Surtain. In February, he won an award that will change his standing within the game. His Broncos are coming off a playoff berth, his first after 4 seasons in Denver, marked by the instability of changing coaches and quarterbacks. Now, finally, he may be ready to pen the most promising pages of a saga he's been writing his whole life. Call it the Pat Surtain NFL Story, Chapter 2. And there's a photograph of Surtain wearing that white hoodie with blue shorts. He's throwing a ball with his dog. And the caption, ball hound, more accustomed to breaking up throws, Surtain doesn't mind airing it out for Deuce. Big Pat, as Sertan Sr. is known among family, was the Dolphins' second-round pick in 1998. He played cornerback in Miami for 7 seasons, making 3 Pro Bowls and a pair of All-Pro teams. Little Pat was born in the spring after his dad's second pro season. I can remember him being at training camp practice with the Dolphins and really just starting to walk, says Big Pat, him running on the field with a football. Little Pat's obsession with the game hardly ended there. He used to draw these elaborate football stadiums, his dad says. At a very young age, I remember one day he posted a picture like, "One day I'm gonna be here." Sertan was traded to the Chiefs during the 2005 draft. He signed an extension and played out the final 4 seasons of his career in Kansas City, which is where Little Pat's earliest football memories took hold. "We had our own suite. He was always locked in on the game," says his mom, Michelle. "I remember him being younger and loving everything about football. If you told him a player's name, he knew their number, or vice versa. If you said, 'What player is number 23 on Chicago?' or whatever, he would know the names off the top of his head." One of his first games in youth football was in Arrowhead Stadium, where his dad played on Sundays. Another time, his team was invited to Arrowhead to take part in Chiefs pregame festivities, which included being on the field for the coin toss. The two Sertans snapped a photo together, which the younger Sertan says is among his first memories of the sport. "They look like giants," he says, of the NFL players. Now the 6'2", 202-pound corner is one himself, living so many of the experiences his dad once did, basking in the full-circle nature of his life and career. For example, in 2006, Pat Sertan Sr. played in a Broncos-Chiefs game at Arrowhead on Thanksgiving. In 2025, Pat Sertan II will play in a Broncos-Chiefs game at Arrowhead on Christmas. After Big Pat's retirement, the family moved back to South Florida. Little Pat and his 2 younger sisters all went to American Heritage, a K-12 prep school and a football powerhouse that would boast a dozen active NFL players in 2024. Sertan coached his son in youth football, and when Little Pat was in junior high, his dad took a job on the high school staff. During Sertan's 4 years of high school, his dad was the defensive backs coach for 2 seasons, the defensive coordinator his junior year, and the Patriots head coach for their final season together. But Little Pat grew up playing running back, common for the most athletic kid on a youth team. But by high school, he had gravitated to his dad's pro position. "Very early on, we would go out there and we would do DB drills," Big Pat says. "So I knew eventually he would play on that side of the ball. He started maturing into his body. It just came naturally. I knew that the fundamentals were there from early on, and he just excelled at it." As the elder Sertan moved up the coaching chain, his attention was dispersed across the team, and he spent less time working directly with his son. "Every now and then, though, he'd have to come down on Little Pat. Sometimes I had to make an example," he says, like, "Oh, he's yelling at Pat, we're not exempt from it." But that was rare. Little Pat's steady demeanor helped him navigate his high-profile circumstances. "Honestly, I was just playing football," he said. "I didn't really understand pressure like that. I just play the game, play the cards I was dealt, and just keep it rolling day by day." He was recruited by Nick Saban to play at Alabama and capped off 3 years in Tuscaloosa by winning the 2020 National Championship, which he says is still the highlight of his football career. Vance Joseph has seen plenty of quarterbacks. The Broncos defensive coordinator played the position himself for 2 years with the Jets and Colts before embarking on a coaching career that now spans 2 decades in the NFL. In another fun twist of how the Sertans' lives are intertwined, Joseph and Big Pat go back to when they were both growing up in New Orleans. Both are from football families. Joseph's older brother, Mickey, is the head coach at Grambling, and his younger brother, Terry, played briefly for the 49ers. Joseph raves about what a marvel Surtain is on the field when he interviews corner prospects at the NFL Combine and asks them whom they watch film of. They talk about Surtain. The coordinator believes anyone can learn from watching his star player. They may say, "I don't have Patrick's size," says Joseph. "I don't have his length. I don't have his speed, maybe not his physical talent, but man, I can play with that leverage. I can play with that knee bend. I can play with that eye placement, how he pedal plants and drives. It's a coach's dream." Joseph says Surtain has the smarts to pair with his rare physical gifts. With age and experience, Joseph adds, he's getting that edge that you want all great players to have, like, I dare you to throw it at me. I dare you to run it my way. Joseph remembers one game when the Broncos were up big late. Pat's playing kind of soft, and he was playing smart, he says. But I was trying to get him to play dominant. He's thinking, okay, we're up by two or three scores. I don't want to give up a big play here. I'm thinking, Patrick, you're Pat Surtain. He's not going to catch the ball on you, long or short, so press the guy. Joseph says Surtain makes his life easier every week, covering deficiencies or allowing certain schemes. The coach considers it part of his job to keep his star involved by forcing teams to throw toward him. So he was as thrilled as anyone to see Surtain win DPOY. As a corner, it's tough to win that award, Joseph says. Only seven have in 54 years. Because 95% of what Patrick does, no one ever sees. Now, when he makes the pick and he makes the tackle, he makes the big play on third down, everyone sees that. But no one sees the second and eight when he's covering his guy like a glove. Joseph can't say enough about how Surtain remains coachable and still knows he has areas to improve. That goes back to how his parents raised him, he says. I've never coached a player of his magnitude that's been so humble and such a sweetheart of a person. I wish he wasn't that way all the time, Vance adds with a chuckle. Even my first year coaching him, I told him, I wish you wasn't so nice. And there are a few more photographs of Surtain as a youngster posing with his father. And then another one, the elder Surtain wearing a Chiefs jersey as he catches the ball in a game against the Bengals. And the younger Surtain in his Broncos uniform leaping in the air in a game against the Raiders. And the caption, like father, the kid who once posed with number 23 at Arrowhead has risen to heights of his own as number two. Surtain's initial impression of Denver was exactly what you'd expect. My first thought was, what's a kid from South Florida doing out here in Denver, Colorado? He laughs now. I was a little nervous at first. It took him a month to adjust to the altitude and to the climate. December of his first season brought the snow. I mean, I lived in Kansas City, he says, but I think snow as an adult is different. But don't get him wrong, draft night 2021 was a highlight for him and for the whole family. One year after a fully virtual NFL draft at the onset of COVID-19, Surtain's draft class enjoyed a socially distant return to the physical world. The venue in Cleveland had an indoor space for the family to be together as the Broncos made him the ninth pick. It was something that he talked about and wished for a long time, his mom says. Just to see his dreams come true, it was really special. Even for a kid who grew up watching his dad in the league and knew from a young age he could do the same. It doesn't hit you until it hits you, Big Pat says. He got the phone call from Denver, and you could see his whole demeanor change, the excitement, the culmination of all the hard work. It really hit him at once, and it hit the whole family at once, that he's going to be playing in the NFL. Surtain made a highlight right away with pick six in his preseason debut in Minnesota. Pat Sr. and Michelle were wearing their number two Denver jerseys in the upper deck. We were in the ceiling, Michelle jokes. We were screaming. People were like, that must be the parents. These days, travel to games is a little tougher. In 2023, Big Pat was hired as the defensive backs coach at Florida State, and the Seminoles practice on Sundays during the season. Michelle divvies up the schedules, taking in mostly home games in Tallahassee and Denver. Of course, Big Pat still watches his son's games and shares pointers. Not all NFL players have dads who coach their position at a Power Four school who'll call you up on a Wednesday and question you about a play where you had inside leverage and the receiver released outside. The reigning defensive player of the year does. Big Pat says most of the time when he passes along notes, Little Pat already knows what he did wrong and is working to fix it. He's a grown man now, so I don't want to blab that way, Big Pat says. But he does know if Dad says something, then Dad knows what he's talking about. Life in the NFL has not been all smooth sailing. The Broncos finished last in the AFC West in both of Sertan's first two seasons. Vic Fangio out, Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson in. Hackett out, Sean Payton in. Wilson out, Bo Nix in. The low point came in week 3 in 2023. It was Little Pat's first and so far only a return to South Florida, his first pro game at Hard Rock Stadium, the same building where Big Pat suited up 58 times for the Dolphins. Big Pat surprised him by showing up to the game, along with around 30 family members, even meeting him during pregame on the field, where Little Pat warmed up wearing a shirt that had his dad's name in Dolphins aqua and images of him in uniform. The Dolphins scored 70 points that day. They could have set the all-time single scoring record, but chose to kneel down instead of kicking a field goal on the game's final play. Unforgivable, the younger Sertan calls the game. Obviously, they was good, but they ain't that damn good. Scoring 70 points, I feel like we didn't execute that game. And yeah, we just got whooped. Though it galvanized them, we all took our lesson that day and moved on, Joseph says. At the end of the day, it was one game. It wasn't fun. It was embarrassing. But we didn't look at it like our lives were over. We looked at it like, let's go correct things and move forward. And I think we're better off for it. And there's another photo of Sertan celebrating with his team as he holds the ball aloft. And the caption, looking ahead. After a turnaround season in 2024, Sertan and the Broncos know that bigger things are within reach. One note stands out from the box score of that game, aside from Miami's 10 touchdowns. Sertan and the rest of the starting secondary played 100% of the defensive snaps, even after the Broncos fell behind by 50. It just spoke to those guys' character that those guys wanted to finish the game, Joseph said. No one even talked about coming out of the game. That wasn't even mentioned. The team quickly turned things around. The Broncos won the following week in Chicago. A 1-5 start gave way to a 5-game winning streak. From weeks 6 through 14, they didn't allow more than 22 points in a game. That stretch run set the stage for the season to follow. In came Nix, the 12th pick in the 2024 draft and the 6th quarterback off the board. He led the team to 10 wins and a playoff berth, including a 5-2 finish to the regular season. Sertan says that Nix's energy was contagious. The defense also knew from that season before that it could step up to support a rookie quarterback. That's what the league's all about, he says, because you know the defense is going to try to create havoc on rookie quarterbacks, and we got to do the same as well. That's what we did the whole season, doing our part. The Broncos' defense finished 3rd in points allowed and 2nd in yards per rush and net yards per pass attempt. The season ended with a 31-7 wild card loss in Buffalo, but it was a major step forward and brought hope for a sustained turnaround. A few weeks later in Big Pat's home city of New Orleans, Sertan was on stage at the NFL Honors during Super Bowl week. His parents were seated next to him when he found out he won, and they had plenty of family on hand to celebrate afterward. Michelle says her son prophesized it. This was his second or third time going to that show in different cities, she said. And the last one, he was like, "When I come back again, I want to be called on the stage for an award." And the next one he went to this year, he was Defensive Player of the Year. And there's a final photo in our article of Sertan. He's kneeling down. He's wearing all dark gray, except for white tennis shoes. And he's sporting a nice watch, posing for the camera. Success can lead to distractions. Sertan has found ways to stay grounded as the requests for his time have continued to increase. He loves visiting a new country every off-season, and this year he went to Japan to see the temples and Mount Fuji. He took up golf. He spent time with Deuce and his longtime girlfriend, Kivia Higdon. He does work for his foundation, strengthening the roots he has put down in Denver. Big goals remain, and in a division stacked with genius coaches and a conference full of star quarterbacks, the Broncos still have their own mountains to climb. But Sertan maintains his confidence as he checks off one more career goal after another. The Super Bowl remains atop the list. The Hall of Fame may be in reach, too. His accolades are piling up quickly. Seems like he just got there, but he's going on his fifth year, Big Pat says. It goes by fast. After all, he'd know. Sertan wears his family name every time he takes the field, obviously on the back of his jersey, but really all over his body. He has images of his father's pro jerseys tattooed on his leg, along with one of his own. The word legacy runs down his right leg. He has certainly blessed in script across his two biceps. His NFL story spans generations as his career unfolds with new memories and parallel experiences in meaningful cities and stadiums across the league, from New Orleans to Miami to Kansas City to Denver. There is much more ink to spill as he continues writing Chapter 2. Our next article is entitled Best of Friends. True partners Jamar Chase and T. Higgins are so good at what they do that they compelled the Bengals to go all in on the proposition that receivers can still win championships. There is a photograph taken by Eric W. Rasko, of a picture of T. Higgins and Jamar Chase in Bengals uniforms taken from above as they look up into the camera. Best of Friends is written by Connor Orr. When you put a fish tank into your wall, how do you feed them? T. Higgins wonders about this as he splayed out on a couch in the basement of Paycor Stadium asking the important questions, questions of a man in possession of newfound wealth. Before his big payday, the Bengals' whiteout had a tank in his Cincinnati home, but the current in the filter was too strong, and it blew the jellyfish around like seagrass in a hurricane. Higgins is obsessed with jellyfish. Then he turned off the filter, which made the house smell like crap. So he switched from jellyfish to eels, then eels to angelfish, then angelfish to a combination of Nemo and Dory fish, clownfish and regal tang. In between, he needed a second tank to separate the angelfish, which are predatory. He also bought a miniature shark. But after Higgins signed a 4-year, $115 million contract extension on March 18th, he purchased a house near his training spot in Florida, where he plans to turn an entire wall there into a jellyfish sanctuary, giving his favorite creatures room to spread their tentacles. That is, if he can figure out how to feed them. On the sofa to Higgins' right is Jamar Chase. After contemplating the good problems that come with monster paychecks, the Bengals signed Chase to a 4-year, $161 million contract on the same day as Higgins, making the all-pro wide receiver the highest-paid non-quarterback in NFL history at the time. After inking their deals, the pair traveled together to Fort Lauderdale and purchased their dream cars at One of One Motorsports. Higgins bought a McLaren, his favorite car from his days playing the video game Midnight Club. He declines to say which model he chose exactly, only conceding that it's fast as blank. Ace purchased a Lamborghini Aventador SVJ, which has been his favorite car since he was a kid playing Need for Speed. After a shockingly low number of phone calls to arrange the purchases, the pair secured the vehicles, both of which are quite rare, from a 22-year-old who works at the shop and has been in the car business for about 18 months now. There are only about 900 of the Lamborghinis in existence. Unfortunately, the one Chase bought doesn't have a sound system that connects to either of his two cell phones to play music via Bluetooth. So one of the most expensive cars in existence, a base price for a Aventador SVJ is around $500,000, needed a $50 solution from the nearby Apple store. I had to go buy one of those dongles, Chase says. Thankfully, Chase, 25, and Higgins, 26, have each other to lean on as they navigate this complex new world. Chase is getting involved in real estate and estimates he now has more than a half a dozen properties. In June, Higgins headlined a car show in Knoxville, Tennessee, and is modifying his McLaren to optimize speed. Both receivers bristled when asked if they drove their cars to the facility, an apparent no-no, as one doesn't want to actually put miles on these vehicles. And as it pertains to football, in an era where the running back position has reclaimed a mantle of significance in the NFL, this pair will attempt to validate the Bengals' decision to assemble the highest-paid wide receiver room in the NFL. Chase and Higgins do nearly everything together, and that included a tandem negotiations, stepbrothers style, in which Higgins hired Chase's agent and made it clear that the receivers were a package deal. But it was the depth of their friendship and what it means to the Bengals, both in terms of offensive schemes and locker room vibes, that the team believes it will bring the ultimate return on investment. Last season in the NFL, both passing attempts per game and passing yards per game were at their lowest point since 2008. With the Eagles bullying their way to a championship last year behind their ground game, and this being a copycat league, the emphasis on rushing the ball will likely now increase. When asked about the success Philadelphia had last year, Chase took a moment to consider what makes the Bengals, and specifically he and Higgins, special in a world that seems to be changing. If somebody hot, Chase says, we know what it takes to keep them hot. And there's a photograph of a Chase in the back of the end zone. He's jumping straight up with his arms stretching up to catch a ball. And the caption, doing it all, Chase led the NFL in yards, receptions, and TDs last year. Only the sixth wideout of the Super Bowl era to achieve that triple crown. It was 2022, week 18, in the third quarter of a home game against the Ravens. Higgins was laid out near midfield in a position familiar to anyone who has tried to prevent a morning hangover puke session. He was rolled over on his right side, knees tucked into his chest, hands over his face. The moment may have seemed insignificant on the surface. The Bengals were comfortably ahead, and both Cincinnati and Baltimore had already locked up playoff spots. But Chase and Higgins each identify that play as being instrumental in building their relationship. It almost killed him, Chase says. Yeah, let's talk about that, Higgins adds later when asked about it separately. The play unfolded like this. At the line of scrimmage, Higgins lined up to the left of quarterback Joe Burrow, and Chase was to his right. Higgins was running an over route at about 15 yards depth that sent him toward the right sideline. Chase, meanwhile, had instructions to run a go ball, meaning a straight line dash toward the end zone. The purpose of Chase's route was to take a defender's eyes from Higgins, who, as the design intended, beat Ravens cornerback Marlon Humphrey and found a swath of open space in the middle of the field. but unbeknownst to Higgins, Chase made a critical error, beginning his route with a hard step to the inside when he needed to be creating what is called outside leverage in order to fully remove his defender, cornerback Darrell Worley, from the play. Chase's misstep set Worley's eyes to the backfield. He jammed Chase and looked at the quarterback just in time to see Burrow throwing the ball to Higgins. Worley immediately left Chase, ran, and crashed into Higgins' ribcage at bullet train speed. After Higgins regained his breath, Chase walked over to the sideline and said, as he explains, "The only thing you can do, blank my effing bad, bro." Higgins appreciated the honesty. "For sure it goes a long way," he says. To understand why this type of acknowledgement is rare, one must first grasp the dynamics of a typical receiver room. Much like a professional cycling team, there are leaders. The ones who actually get to wear the yellow jersey, do the interviews, make the money, and garner the accolades. Then there are domestiques who, while talented in their own right, are often deployed in a service role that chiefly enhances the performance of the most talented member of the unit. On that play, Chase, coming off a 2021 season in which he had been named not only Rookie of the Year, but also an All-Pro, was briefly stepping down into a service role, one that generationally talented receivers don't always take on with enthusiasm. Steve Smith Sr., a future Hall of Fame wide receiver, calls such decoy assignments love ball routes because the receiver has to truly care in order to sell the fake to defensive backs trained to pick up on his cues. And there's another photo. This one shows Chase on the sidelines rubbing what looks like a donut, I guess, with frosting on the face of his quarterback, Joe Burrows. And then a second photo of Chase and Higgins in the end zone after a TD to do a dance together. And the caption for these two photos, "Fresh moves, Burrow," in the first photo, has connected so well with Higgins and Chase that once frugal Cincinnati opened up its checkbook. Chase, leaning back against a cinder block wall a few feet from the visitors' locker room, wonders how many other top receivers have the kind of mutually supportive relationship with a teammate that he has with Higgins. "There's not a lot," Chase says. "You can't be selfish. That's the hardest part, especially when you're a receiver who always wants the ball. You have to know how to let someone else eat. You know what I'm saying? I expect 8 catches and 100 yards from him. My standards and expectations are so high for him." Bengals offensive coordinator Dan Pitcher points to 2 particular love ball routes from Chase that exemplify his relationship with Higgins. At the Jets in week 8 of the 2021 season, with 4 minutes to go in the third quarter, Chase is lined up to the left of Burrow and Higgins is to the right. Higgins is running a deep over route to the left side, and Chase begins to pick apart the Jets' defensive backfield one by one. A hard stare at cornerback Bryce Hall freezes the nearest defender to Higgins. A breakneck curl back to the left sideline also ties up Ashton Davis, the safety who had the best opportunity to tackle Higgins on the play. Higgins was brought down just inside the 10-yard line for a 54-yard reception. Against the Browns in Week 7 of the 2024 season, Chase's gravity was so strong that Juan Thornhill, the only safety over the top of the defense, shuffled to his left a few steps to blanket the star wideout. To Thornhill's right was Higgins, who caught a quick pass off the line, broke a tackle, and with Thornhill taken out of the play, walked freely into the end zone for a 25-yard score. Stories of a defense cheating toward the best receiver in the NFL aren't necessarily surprising, but with Chase and Higgins, it's not just a one-way street. Higgins is enough of a threat to free up Chase as well. T discourages the defense from always double-teaming or playing cover 2 to Jamar's side, says Pitcher. Last season, Chase led the league with 127 catches, 1,708 yards, and 17 TDs, making him only the sixth player in the Super Bowl era to win the receiver's Triple Crown. According to Pro Football Focus, 30% of Chase's receptions, 25% of his yards, and roughly half of his TDs came on snaps where the defense opted not to send a second defender at him because Higgins was deemed nearly as threat-worthy. Literally, any time Jamar makes a play against single coverage, you can make a case that he's only seeing single coverage because T is also on the field, pitcher says. Chase is growing tired of the gritty. It's not that his signature touchdown dance is going to end, it's just that he's asked to do it a lot, such as the burden faced by Mick Jagger being asked to sing Satisfaction. I'm not a circus animal, he says. There's also the fact that Chase's version of the dance, a kind of hunched-over shuffle step paired with rhythmic swinging arm movements, includes a moment in which he points his finger at the ground. This gesture has once too often crossed over into the NFL's ridiculously inconsistent and unfortunately fine-worthy enforcement of celebrations that appear to reference the use of weapons. Chase, in essence, is being sanctioned for making finger guns when he is, in fact, not making finger guns. Chase was charged nearly $20,000 for doing a dance in Week 5 game last year that he had done hundreds of times before. When I had the meeting to appeal the fine, I showed them a video of every other time I was doing it, and they're all the same, Chase says. The NFL said, "We don't care. That was, like, not cool." Here's another instance in which Chase Higgins' relationship proves invaluable. Higgins is a dancer, like a really, really good dancer. As Chase looks to freshen up his end zone routine, Higgins is the only person I talk about dance moves with. The pair exchanged dance videos on Instagram. Higgins introduced Chase to and taught him the finer points of the Baltimore strut and the down-de-way, a dance native to the city of Cincinnati. T will dance at the club, Chase says. T's a dancer, and women love dancers. I don't know what the heck that is. I don't judge, bro. A friendship as rich as this one in a team setting will almost always spill over into the critical realm of leadership. The Bengals went into the last season with one of the youngest rosters in the NFL, with an average age just over 25. This will be the team's second year without wideout Tyler Boyd, who had served as a kind of paternal figure for the receivers room before signing with the Titans as a free agent in 2024. Now Higgins and Chase are the two most veteran receivers on a team facing high expectations. During Chase's rookie season, the Bengals reached the Super Bowl. The following year, Cincinnati won 12 games, instilling the kind of championship dreams that come with having a QB like Burrow and talent like Chase and Higgins around him. It's the situation NFL teams aspire to, but over time it can test your resilience, especially when you're in the same conference as the Chiefs, who seem to use some kind of dark arts magic to clear their path to the AFC title every year. And there's a final photo in our article of Higgins horizontal with the ground as he grabs onto a pass with the referee in the background and a defender falling at his feet. And the caption, TDs, despite playing only 12 games in 2024 due to hamstring and quad injuries, Higgins had a career best 10 touchdown receptions. Remaining grounded requires a routine and the right mindset. Chase and Higgins can define selflessness on each play, but their next step as leaders was always going to be instilling that standard organically amongst their teammates. In other words, the next step was always Taco Tuesday. Says Higgins, "That's real big with me and Jamar. The tradition started with just two of them. Now coaches come. So do additions to the team." Higgins describes the guest list as different people, and the top of the order of business is talking about life, activities outside of football, and things like that. We're the leaders in the room now, Higgins says, before launching into a list of his favorites at Tequila Modern Mexican over on Madison Road, about 10 minutes from the stadium. His power move is not necessarily get tacos, but sometimes to go with lamb chops and tequila dip. That's shrimp, chicken, and steak pooled in a vat of queso cheese topped with pico de gallo. Higgins says the participants will get asked for pictures from time to time at these meals, but that a lot of people understand that we're here bonding. At their post-contract signing press conference back in March, which they did together, of course, Bengals head coach Zach Taylor introduced the receivers. He noted that both players are built differently from most people. And while this is an all-time coaching platitude, wouldn't nearly every athlete good enough to play in the NFL technically be built differently from a genealogical perspective? Perhaps their relationship is what the coach hopes will make the Bengals different as a whole. Though Cincinnati has, for years, spent money commensurately with some of the top teams in the NFL, added an indoor practice facility, hired more scouts, and just over the last 3 years signed Burrow, Chase, and Higgins to historic extensions, the franchise will always, to some degree, battle a warped perception of its frugality. Their contract standoff this offseason with all-pro sack artist Trey Hendrickson, for example, has reinforced the old notions. But it's hard to believe this franchise is frugal to a fault when Higgins and Chase, on rare occasion, decide to pull their high-priced rides out of their respective garages, or when you catch them together on one of their frequent boutique shopping trips in downtown Miami. Not that Chase and Higgins have gone completely upscale. Another of their favorite local spots near the Bengals Stadium in nearby Covington is a Waffle House next to a place called Smilin' Smoker and Liquor. It might be more popular in the NFL to hand the ball off now, to grind down opponents, to eliminate interceptions and sack fumbles, but for the Bengals, the chance to go with this kind of talent, this kind of swag, this moment of cool, was too much to pass up. Higgins talks about how eager he is to start the next phase of his life, to pass along everything he's learning and to lead. He'll do anything, he says, save for actually letting someone else from the team ride in the McLaren. You have to earn your way to the top, he says. The funny thing about buying your dream car, though, is that the serotonin is going to level off and the restlessness is going to rise again. In the great ones, at least, Higgins and Chase didn't enjoy the moment of purchase for long. Getting the McLaren was pretty dope, Higgins says, rising off the couch. Once you get it, you're like, oh my God, I got it. Then it's like, I got more work to do. I got all this money. Now I gotta go make some more. Next, we'll turn to the new Sports Illustrated, the October issue. It's the power list, the 50 most influential figures in sports. On the cover is Jaden Daniels. He's crouched down. He's looking deeply into the camera with a gold chain dangling off his neck. The QB is an NFL change agent, and making football fun in D.C. is just the start, by Connor Orr. Now, we'll start our readings on the power list and Jaden Daniels next week, but we do have time, I think, to read one baseball article, Glute Force. Known affectionately as the Big Dumper, coupon-clipping catcher Cal Raleigh has masterfully handled Seattle's staff while putting on an unprecedented home run hitting display. There's a photograph that starts our article of Cal Raleigh shown taking practice swings in the on-deck circle. It was taken by Simon Brody. Glute Force is written by Stephanie Epstein. After every Mariners win, the 26 victors gather for a brief ceremony. Baseball is a team sport, but everyone involved understands that on any given night, one person was probably more valuable than everyone else. And only one person can receive the footlong pair of gilded testicles hanging from a chain emblazoned with a trident that accompanies the poetic title, Nuts of the Game. This season, the most valuable player has usually been catcher Cal Raleigh, who entered the stretch run with the major league lead in dingers in the scorebooks, the home run derby trophy on his mantle, and history in his sight. With his 42nd long ball, he surpassed Todd Hundley of the 1996 for the single-season record by a switch-hitting catcher. Up next was the Royals' Salvador Perez's 2021 mark of 48 by a catcher, which he eclipsed on August 24. With 6 weeks remaining, Raleigh still held an outside chance at the American League single-season home run record, which the Yankees' Aaron Judge established at 62 3 years ago. Raleigh sat a tenth of a point ahead of Judge for the AL lead in win probability, added a measure of how clutch he's been. Raleigh is a perfect fit for Sports Illustrated's power list issue, and he did it all while shepherding a pitch staff beset by injuries to a 3.95 ERA, seventh in the AL. Seemingly every night he does something that makes his teammates gap, something nuts-worthy. We should call it the Cal Award, probably, says righty Logan Evans. But unfortunately, it's Raleigh, 28, who gives out the nuts, which means he's almost never the one receiving him. If he hits a game-winning home run, he honors the reliever who kept it close. Doesn't it seem kind of ludicrous to create a Player of the Game Award and all but exclude the guy who's usually the player of the game? It's not about that, Raleigh says. It's more about bringing everybody together at the end of the day and trying to enjoy a win for a few minutes. Because it's so hard in the big leagues to win. You got to be able to enjoy it. And there's always people that contribute, whether it's one pitch or one swing. Maybe it was doing something little that goes unrecognized. So for me, it's not always about rewarding the guy who hits a home run or two home runs. It's more about rewarding a guy who does their job well. Raleigh's been doing his job well since 2022, the year he hit a towering walk-off shot to put an explosive end to what was then the longest playoff drought in North American sports. He's been famous since July when he became the toast of All-Star Week with his prodigious power and remarkable rear end, which led to the best nickname in baseball, the Big Dumper. Raleigh spent his whole life preparing to be good at baseball without giving much thought to what might accompany that success. In a lot of ways, his reality changed nearly overnight, but his attitude is not. Says President of Baseball Operations, Jerry DePoto, "I've never worried less about someone being able to handle it." And there's a photo of Raleigh in his swing as the camera catches the moment his bat hits the ball. And the caption, "Having a ball." As Raleigh, who hit 38 home runs before the All-Star break, chased history at the plate, Seattle fans took to naming kids and sandwiches after him. Raleigh hates the premise of this story. First, he disputes the idea that he's famous. I wouldn't say that, he scoffs. So he became the first catcher to win the home run derby with his dad, Todd, pitching to him, and his 15-year-old brother, Todd Jr., catching, while nearly 6 million people watched from home. So he's been in a T-Mobile commercial, signed endorsement deals with Nintendo, a local hospital chain, and best of all, a portable toilet brand, Honey Bucket. Todd Sr. and Cal's mom, Stephanie, lined up for a bus during All-Star Week only to realize that it was wrapped in their son's face. "I'm just a pretty average guy," Cal insists. But what's worse is that people keep trying to tell him he's not. Longtime friend Brett Baldwin, who grew up with him in Kowali, North Carolina, is now an engineer nearby, tries to imagine how the interview went. "Please don't ask me another question about why I'm so good," he guesses correctly. Make no mistake, Raleigh is polite for the entire 12 minutes, plus another 5 a couple days later, but he visibly winces at the attention. "Nice to see you again," he lies, before appearing to weigh the merits of turning and walking away. Naturally, his teammates find this behavior hilarious. Every day or two, right-hander Logan Gilbert shakes his head at his friend. "Fame," he pronounces gravely, "has changed you." He is not the only one who has assigned himself the task of keeping Raleigh in check. "Everybody's been cheering for him a bunch recently, so I've been trying to boo him a little bit to keep him down," says righty Bryce Miller. It's funny because he's the last guy to actually change, says Gilbert with a laugh. He really does handle it very well, but I'm trying to convince him otherwise. The people close to Raleigh often find themselves in the unusual position of having to remind him that he's a superstar. He's the Prince of Kowali, says Baldwin. The neighboring town of Silva, home of Smoky Mountain High, which Raleigh attended, recently declared July 14, 2025, to be Cal Raleigh Day. Raleigh is such a major celebrity there that he's made Baldwin a minor celebrity. People regularly recognize him and ask for details on Cal's life. Meanwhile, Raleigh says it has never occurred to him to use his name to get a coveted dinner reservation. He's cautious even when he eats at fast casual restaurants that charge extra for various toppings. Sometimes if I want guac, I'll get it, allows Raleigh. Earlier this year, when he and three teammates were headed to dinner, he ordered them an Uber X, the company's cheapest option. Raleigh signed a six-year, $105 million extension before the season. Backup catcher Mitch Garver points out, order an Uber Black, he says. Raleigh only recently upgraded from the Toyota 4Runner he bought used to a new Toyota Tacoma. I've always been more of a cheap guy, he acknowledges. I like coupons. DePoto suspects that it's this attitude plus a few dozen clutch home runs that has so endeared him to Seattle. Raleigh looks and acts more like the clubhouse attendant putting baseballs in buckets than the slugger putting baseballs in the stands. His dad says 12 months ago on this calendar day, he's the same guy. He's not quite the same player, though. And there's a picture of Raleigh in his catcher's uniform, mask, glove, shin guards. He's getting ready to throw the ball back either to the pitcher or second base. He could always catch, the son of a baseball coach who spent 8 years at Western Carolina and then 4 at Tennessee. Young Cal grew up studying the game. I love the nuances, he says. By middle school, he was calling his own games. You didn't shake, recalls Baldwin. Cal was the captain of every team he ever played on. He was a Division I caliber basketball player, his father recalls, but he drove his coaches crazy by passing up clean shots. He'd go rebound it and kick it back out and want his buddy to experience some of that, Todd recalls. Cal came by that naturally. When Todd coached his son in travel ball, he always sat him for the first game of a tournament. I just never wanted that to be a thing, Todd says. He probably had less at-bats than anyone else on that team. We get in deeper into the tournament, and I remember parents finally complaining, hey, you gotta play him. This is ridiculous. But I think he always liked it, too. He didn't want to be like, oh, I'm getting more at-bats because of who my dad is. On the drive back from games, they really discussed strikeouts and home runs. All Todd wanted to talk about, and eventually all Cal wanted to talk about, was whether the team had won. In high school, if he didn't have a great game and they won, he was fine, Todd said. He'd be the first guy jumping up and down happy. So it's not an act. DePoto got his first glimpse of that attitude in 2019 when he visited the High A Modesto Nuts on a day Gilbert was pitching and Raleigh was off. The GM noticed the catcher of the future crouched on an overturned bucket of baseballs, taking notes on Gilbert's outing the way other pitchers are often assigned to do. After the game, DePoto brought it up with the coaching staff. Why do you have Cal charting? He asked. The pitching coach laughed. We don't have him doing that, he said. When DePoto asked Raleigh about it, the catcher explained he was trying to learn more about how the pitcher saw himself so that he could refine his game calling. By the next year, the Mariners were assigning all their young catchers to chart their young pitchers. Those relationships pay off every day. Since the start of 2018, the year Raleigh was drafted out of Florida State, DePoto has made 121 trades, according to a tracker maintained by Yahoo Sports' Jordan Schusterman. But of Seattle's top six starters, five were drafted and developed by the team. They are Raleigh's best friends. Several of them have been his roommates. He doesn't let them make excuses, says Mariners pitching coach Pete Woodworth. He doesn't let them stray. He keeps them accountable. As soon as they start veering off track, he slaps them in the face and gets them back. Many pitchers, he adds, want to make it more complicated than it is. Cal says This is who you are. This is what you're good at. Let's just do that better. That strategy fires his pitchers up. He does not play the cat and mouse game, always trying to fool the hitter. He calls for the pitcher's strength again and again. If something's working, he's not going to go away from it until they prove they can hit it, says Miller. And Raleigh extends that same level of focus to every pitcher, even the ones who only throw one inning, says Woodworth. He sits down with them and lets them air out the blank that goes on inside their crazy little brains and then gets them back to what's simple and what's successful. There's a photograph, our final one for this article, of Raleigh posing with his dad and brother. Raleigh's wearing a large silver medal around his neck. His dad is holding a crossed bats trophy, and his brother with a championship belt in his hands, and the caption, Family Jewels. Competing alongside his dad and brother, Raleigh brought home substantial hardware as the first catcher to win the Home Run Derby. It has not always been so easy for him to do the same at the plate. He struggled early, facing a different sort of power issue. He managed just a 532 OPS in 47 games in 2021 after slugging 608 in AAA. He looked even worse to start 22. When the team sent him back down, his career batting average was 166 and his slugging percentage was 294. Cal had been cut from teams as a child, and his father always brushed off his complaints, just get better. He delivered the same message now. Around the same time, Mariners catcher Tom Murphy dislocated his left shoulder, forcing the team to call Raleigh back up, ready or not. In his sixth game back, he socked a go-ahead home run. I think it really gave him confidence to just say, you know, I gotta go, says DePoto. I'm not worried about what anybody else is thinking. Raleigh had an 807 OPS the rest of the way and delivered that cathartic playoff-ushering bomb against the Athletics, the 26th of 27 he'd hit of the season. But nothing foretold this year. It took an assist from the greatest Mariners hitter ever to unlock this one. When Raleigh struggles at the plate, he tends to get too far forward. Instead of waiting for the ball, he lunges at it. He's late on fastballs and early on off-speed pitches. As this season began, Seattle Director of Hitting Strategy and Hall of Fame DH Edgar Martinez set Raleigh up with a chest-high tee that he placed near the catcher's front foot along with a short bat. The idea was to force him to stay upright. What it did was amazing, says hitting coach Kevin Seitzer. Oh my gosh. What it did was create one of the most lethal hitters in the sport. But when Raleigh and his father discussed his goals for the season, they didn't spend much time on home runs hit or even on shutouts caught. Cal decided he wanted to take on more of a leadership role. As much as Raleigh prefers to lead by example, he's starting to understand the power of his voice. He doesn't talk much, but when he talks, it's an impact, says Seitzer. He just breathes life into people with just his presence. So Raleigh has started speaking up more in hitters' meetings and in the dugout during games, even if it's just to offer enthusiasm. The city, meanwhile, has fallen in love with him and with his club. The Mariners staged a campaign to get Raleigh to the All-Star game, donning Be a Peach, Vote Cal shirts, complete with emoji, and using a butt-themed walk-up song playlist. Raleigh finished with the second most votes in the league after Judge, and became Seattle's first elected starter since designated hitter Nelson Cruz in 2015. Local restaurants have debuted meals named after him. Fans regularly tell Raleigh they've named their children after him. Sometimes it all feels like a lot, but he understands what fans understand. He is leading a team that could make Seattle go nuts. And that's all the time we have for this edition of The Sports Show. My name is Steve Jack. Thanks for joining me.